Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. My attention was just drawn to something which was posted by my good friend Leslie Lett, and he says, which is quoted, a quotation from Verla de Pisa, and she says, "I'm a little different. I would not hold it against the people for what happened in May 2018. I'm prepared to let bygones be bygones and to stand up on behalf of the people, because if ever they needed a voice, it was no." So I, like many other Barbadians, are happy to know that Verla has forgiven us for what we did to the Democratic Labour Party in May 2018. If Verla continues on this current path, I believe she will need to forgive us for what we are likely to do to them in 2023 as well. Because statements like this do not reflect that the leader of the Democratic Labour Party has any clue what hit them, what is likely to hit them again in the future. I'll stop there. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
Welcome back,
Statsman. How are you doing?
Yes, welcome back.
Good.
I agree with you 100%. I see the said victory, said line for the next election. They don't have a clue what's going on. She should turn the thing around, and they should apologize to the people of Barbados, what it did to them over the last 10 years, right? Last Friday was 1 year, 8 months, or 20 months, or 610 days since this administration came to office, and I'm very pleased with the work of turning around Barbados and reshaping Barbados that they have been doing. They're meeting a lot of targets. I got about 29 so far. The latest few is about the arrival of the garbage truck. Then you got the $2 million electrical upgrade to the NHC housing and some new judges, among others. Those are the last three that I see here. What I'd like to talk about today is that it's noted that whenever anybody say that there was corruption during the last administration, former senators, Verla de Pisa, Maxine McLean, among others, all respond with their usual comment, "Bring the evidence or shut up."
What the Prime Minister said, highest integrity, moral character, and fiber,
no one behind
personal
him.
Integrity, not one.
Behind
so maybe
him.
It was just one, but you the know, others are... of the highest order. And then indeed, maybe since that case is also subject to review, it's entirely possible that history may prove that it was not won.
It's a possibility.
Yeah.
It's really pathetic. That's really a sad day.
I also thought that it was an unfortunate statement, because I don't think it is a fair reflection of what Don Valinis is.
But he was dealing in the context of the case.
I know, but I don't think that the
case...
I will go on the record as saying that I don't think that the case presents a fair reflection of the person that was Don Valinis.
Well, maybe he is not judging his character.
And that's to me what it comes down to, because there is a presumption, and I appreciate that, you know, from a political angle, you will make your points, but I'm stepping back from that, and I'm saying that... There is a judgment, I think, among the public of Barbados that sees Don Valinis very differently. The reality, however, is that we have a judgment of a court that says that he is a money launderer.
What is one thing?
And I'm saying that that's something that we can't run away from. But I will go further and say, identify for me 10 average Barbadians that would not welcome Don Valinis to their house for a meal. He could come at me and have a meal anytime. I am not ashamed to say that he is my friend. So I'm saying that even though you have that judgment and you have that declaration, I think that the vast majority of Barbadians still think that he's a pretty decent individual who they would love to have home by them to eat some pigfoot sauce on a Saturday.
But that's
his thing. I mean, he likes that.
I don't think that's on all fours.
Tell me how it differs.
You might very well come.
You would not invite him by you to have pigfoot sauce?
Well, I don't think he was charged for murder.
But you're not answering the question, Statsman.
What was the question?
I asked him, you would not invite him by you for pigfoot sauce on a Saturday?
Well, he's my favorite DLP person. Okay. You should know that too. Yeah. He's my favorite person. But I got to deal with the issues. Yeah. It ain't about so much about what I think about him. It's what he's reportedly done. Yeah. That's the issue.
But I'm just saying that, look, we have established what the court said, and we've discussed that issue a lot. I wrote an article on it, and I couldn't say a lot of this in the article simply because I didn't have the space, because we have a word limit. I do feel that there's a difference between a person's political judgment and the type of moral judgment that comes from a court that says, based on the evidence before me, that the individual is a bad person. I think that most Barbadians, if you speak to, do not think that Don Valinis is a bad person. Most Barbadians think that Don Valinis is probably one of the better examples of decency within the Democratic Labour Party government that has just since passed. The irony, however, is that he has been convicted of an offense, and as a result, he wears a label. The point is, I think that when you ask most Barbadians, what do they think of him? And as I said, do you think that they'll be willing to have Donval home by them for some Pickford sauce on a Saturday? And I think most people would say yes.
I think you're missing the point, really.
I'm not missing any point.
No. It's not a matter if Mr. Ennis is a decent person or not.
Yeah,
I don't
conviction.
Think that's the issue at hand.
Right.
The issue is that he was found guilty of corruption.
And I get that, Statsman. And that's why I am saying, and I was saying in my article, the Democratic Labour Party has to understand that. They have to draw a line under that period, and they have to say, okay, let's move on. Because ultimately, whenever they get into a battle of defense regarding the last 10 years, persons like yourself would always have more ammunition. Because nowhere else in the Caribbean has a minister been convicted of money laundering. It happened under their watch, in their cabinet, which is an indictment on all of them, not just him. So my thing is that I think it is enough for us to save the fact that most of us still think he's a pretty decent guy.
Oh.
Hold on to that and essentially throw away the political thing, because there ain't no political nothing that can be salvaged from this. So when I hear his colleagues like Lowe and Jones and whatnot speaking and getting all excited, look, the reality of the situation is the dog dead.
But the sooner
that they come to that conclusion, the sooner we can move on and get back to the reality that when all is said and done, Barbadians still like Donville.
But you see, it's interesting that this act was done or committed, let's say, well, in Barbados, or originated in Barbados. But the Americans did what they had to do because it took the U.S. Financial system.
Mm-hmm.
So that was done there. But we got to also look now at what happened was done locally. And when the British law firm take their action or do their inquiries, as some people in the country wouldn't be brought up as well. That's the most significant.
That's left to be seen, but
it's left to be seen.
I think you also know that part of the problem that we will have here in Barbados is that it is not illegal to do a lot of that kind of stuff in Barbados.
I mean,
it's illegal in principle, but technically speaking, you know.
To do what?
No, I'm saying that, technically speaking, if a person who is politically exposed, which is how Donville would have been categorized, does a similar thing in Barbados under the radar, the ability to prove that individual has broken the law is considerably more challenging the ways our laws are framed.
Why you say that?
Because that's just the way it is.
Now,
and that's the reason why the police haven't brought any charges against him here for something that was obviously done here.
Yeah, but you see what is happening, right?
So you heard the general secretary saying, he's a lawyer, I ain't a lawyer, right? He said that the case would not have stood up under Barbados law.
That is
a reality, and it's also an indictment of our system.
No, that's his opinion.
It's an indictment that a person could have done all that he has done, all that Donald has done in Barbados, and a person ain't doing anything wrong.
Let's wait and see when the British firm do their investigation.
What
will happen regarding that matter? There are too many instances. Now, I realize that in this case with the ICBL, you had a shell company as well involved. Now, when you look at our Cahill contract, in fact, it said Cahill is a shell company, or was a shell company.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a couple months or so down the road when
the
two collapse in Britain, he walk away.
Yeah.
anything he didn't know that there was such they have such severe issues.
Let me think, because there's a couple of things I wanted to say on this, and I can say them to you. The lady at the center of the case, and it came out in evidence that she said that it was unusual to pay what they call a signing bonus. What was the term that was used? It was a
finder's fee, isn't it?
Something like that, like a finder's fee. Basically, it's a commission that's associated with finding work. Right. She's saying that it is unusual for them to pay that to politically exposed persons. And that was the beginning of her concern, but she did it nonetheless. And she admitted to this in court, so we're not saying anything off the record. This idea of paying a person commission for finding work, in my line of business, is commonplace, where I have referred a client to someone. A person says to me, I need to get something done. I refer a client to that, and I say to the person, I'm referring this individual to you to get this work. Just give me something. And they would give a commission based on the fact that the project was large. In the business of governance and in the business of business, basically, that type of thing is not an unusual thing. What was unusual was that normally you would not give it to the person who was empowered to make the decision. Because that is called a kickback.
Right.
So I am saying that in the context of what happens in Barbadian business, in the legitimate operations, perfectly legitimate operations, the idea of paying someone a commission because they have fun work for you is not an unusual thing. I always used to make a joke, and I've said this on the radio before, that the difference between a kickback and a thank you gift is whether you give the person Johnny Walker Blue or Johnny Walker Black. Right? If a client gives me a nice retainer,
right,
I must buy him a drink. But why shouldn't I buy him a drink? So if I buy Johnny Walker Black, I am showing that I am grateful because he has given me work.
You're talking about you and the person, you as a private sector.
Me professionally, or however you want to talk about. You can say me hypothetically.
I'm talking about the government.
But I'm saying in the same way, right? There's nothing fundamentally wrong with me saying, look, whoever it is that responsible for this contract, I will buy them a drink. The challenge, however, is that if you move from Johnny Walker Black to Johnny Walker Blue, it smells of a bribe.
Look. You know that even when the attorney said that, and this is he wasn't responsible for this.
Well, there you go. Because the idea that we have this idea of a politically exposed person, that is sophisticated language. That's language that has entered the lexicon of commerce. You asked me in Barbados, right? If a minister came into a store and someone said to him, "I want you to have this." Would they say no? And would you see anything wrong with it if they said yes?
Actually, I agree. If the scenario you just made, I would agree. But nothing wrong. But when you go to have a meal, right?
And I have had a situation outside of Barbados, not saying in Barbados, where I have a meal with somebody who is a government minister. And you go to the restaurant, you have the meal, and you finish the meal, and you know the person go to pay the bill, and they say it's comped.
Yes.
There's nothing, but the point is that is technically speaking being categorized as illegal.
But that context is, I agree with you, said Michelle Obama and like that case. But when you sign a huge contract on the behalf of your government and the people of Barbados, there should not be no,
hanky-panky.
Right.
You shouldn't be buying a body nothing. Involved.
So right. That's a different scenario.
And what I'm saying to you, Statsman, is that I understand why you, for political purpose, have to pillory Donville. I understand that. But I am just saying that coming out of this conversation, we have to have a conversation about the reality of the fact that the practices in Barbados and the practices outside of Barbados regarding this type of thing are very different. The reason why you can't lock up nobody in Barbados for it. It's because it is consistent with not only our culture, but our expectation.
Look.
If it is that it is changing, I think it's a good thing.
Look, the white oak, when they were in Barbados, they slashed the majority of contracts without a whimper from the people that who got the contract. So what I'm saying to you?
The contracts were generous.
This is lopsided.
Not necessarily. It says that the people understand. people understand that the money that they were getting, they won't get anyhow.
They were lopsided contrast. And you got even, as I said, you got the San Juan de Kay Hill, for instance.
I don't know if I agree with you on that, though.
But you don't have to.
No, because if I get a contract, if I get a contract based on the fact that I expect that a client can pay so much money, and my client's capacity is reduced, and they come back to me and say, look, we can't pay you this. Now, my thing is, if I ain't going to get $500, but I could get $200, I would say, well, let me get you $200. It's better that I get you $200 and don't get nothing at all. And that's pretty much what government was saying to people, right? I owe you a lot of money. I think it is in your interest to agree and take half. Because the alternative option is that you might bust luck and you ain't getting none.
No, not really. I can show you one example at the BWA. Some of the arrangement that they had, the people just canceled them out. They just abolished the thing.
I hear you, but I'm saying what as a business person would cause you to make that decision? Can you make that decision because you feel it was lopsided? Or do you make that decision because you appreciate the circumstances have changed?
Government minister or whoever.
I got you.
Company. Right?
I just feel that it is part of the reality where people are realized that, look, you know, you might not get anything at all. So, you know, the circumstances have changed. One of my challenges in business, and I can confess this, is that my hourly rate has a lot to do with what you can pay or how valuable the information is to you. Right? Because a poll is not like any other piece of information. It is a value.
And
it has to reflect the value to the individual.
Right.
If that individual overnight becomes an opposition party, the information is less valuable.
But let me throw this one at you.
So my thing is that I might sell you information today that is extremely valuable. The circumstances might change tomorrow. And I might say, man, buddy, look, if you could give me $100 for this,
fair enough.
I would be glad.
That's business strategy. But let me say this to you, right? The question is, the last administration shunned the multilateral institutions like they had the plague. And they would get the concessional loans from them.
Yeah, perhaps.
So why did they deal with the international body? But they dealt with a lot of monkey stupidness, with a lot of high-end interest rates, and a lot of millions. So I'm saying that's what you got to factor in as well. You got to factor in this. I remember that.
The problem, Statsman, is that the Democratic Labour Party did not have the political capital to do all of this.
To do what?
To do what Prime Minister Motley is doing.
No, that's a political capital.
But of course they didn't have the political capital to go to any multilateral institution.
No, they had it.
They didn't. I disagree with you, they did not.
What's the political capital you need?
She has 30 seats and she has the support of... This whole idea of the default, right? The selective default that was done. Do you think that Chris Sinclair could have negotiated that?
No.
Precisely.
But they get to position the selective default 10 years and over 10 years.
And I understand, Statsman, but I am saying that you have to understand that part of the reason that Prime Minister Motley was able to do what Chris Sinclair could not do was because she had political capital and he didn't. Chris Sinclair went into the election saying that there was nothing wrong with the economy that he couldn't fix, that he is not going to the International Monetary Fund, he's not sending home public servants, and he is not cutting salaries.
Right.
He had all of these parameters.
Right.
You remember what Prime Minister Motley went into the election saying? When I get in, I'm going to assess the situation and see what has to be done.
But this is 10 years down the road.
And I understand that. And I'm just saying
that.
So he
had the political capital.
He did not. He didn't.
So what was the political capital that he didn't have?
The last election result was what, 16-14?
16-14, yes.
16-14 in a situation where you are being led by one of the weakest individuals that has ever led a country in the Caribbean.
Yeah, we understand.
Where you have this lopsided arrangement regarding power in a cabinet, where you can't find nobody, even in situations where a person in your cabinet does something that is questionable, that is raised by the courts of law in Barbados. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that when you have a situation like that, you don't have political capital to do anything.
But it's not political capital.
I disagree.
And the policies,
have to follow. They have to follow that reality.
You didn't need political capital to go to IMF. All they had is
of course IMF. You do. Of course
okay,
you do.
Okay. So M M 16, 14, right? When Prime Minister Stewart came back in office, I remember Stewart, Prime Minister Stewart saying, whatever I have to go to, I'm going to look straight in your faces and tell you I got to go to your IMF.
You think that after Prime Minister Stewart telling people that he ain't sending home a single person, and then sending home 2,000, that he had any political capital left to do anything?
No, but you don't need political capital to go to the IMF.
But he said he's not going to the IMF either. To the IMF would have been an admission that they had laid. They already admitted that they had lied by going and cutting the 2,000.
Well, that's a different line. I agree with that line. Yeah. I agree you with that point. But isn't about the political capital? Yeah. Is that yes? Then they sort of lick up the chest and feel out, man, that if you go to the IMF, that I have failed. But ain't necessarily so.
Let me just leave something with you, because I look at Grenada and what happened under Keith Mitchell. Because remember, Keith Mitchell was the first person that did this selective default thing, right?
Yes.
With the same white oak.
Right.
Keith Mitchell left an economic situation in 2008 that got worse by 2013. Mm-hmm. There is good reason to believe that if Tillman Thomas, when he got into office, instead of fighting and quarreling with the others, that he went straight to the International Monetary Fund, perhaps that situation could have resolved itself. Right. He didn't.
Right.
Because he also felt that there was nothing that had to be done that Nazim Burke couldn't do.
Right.
The reality is that when Keith Mitchell got back into office, he had political capital to throw away. So he goes to the IMF ostensibly to fix a problem that he would have created in the 15 years previous. But then why you remember that? Because a change of government, Tillman Thomas, everything is blamed on Tillman Thomas. And the size of the defeat was so massive that he was able to say, okay, I'm going to the IMF. But when you think about it, most of the problems he was going to the IMF to fix were problems of his own making.
Sandiford.
And that's why I'm saying that Sandiford, that's how political capital works.
Not really. Sandiford went to the IMF. Did he have political capital?
He had more than a friend of Stewart had.
But yeah, but he might have. But I don't think it was the political capital. It is the will. Yeah. It is the will.
The fact that friend of
the fact
that Sandy was able to survive 3 years after that decision is proof that he had political capital. And I tell you, I learned a lot. I was one of Sandy's first harshest critics.
But I'm not dealing with political capital.
I learned a lot about the politics of that situation versus the politics of this current situation that we have to deal with.
I agree with you with that. These guys 10 years ahead had a clue, absolutely a clue what going on. And as I said, I would like to ask them, where did they go and get necessary loans?
And that's why I'm saying that I am not going to ask that question. My question is a more political one. I have a lot of respect for Chris Sinclair as a political analyst. He sat next to me at the university, and he was one of the top political scientists in the class. But the point I'm making is that what I would say is not, why didn't they go for multilateral financing? My question to him is, why would you have taken that job under those circumstances?
That's
one thing that boggles my mind to this very day. A person who is as intelligent as him, and contrary to popular belief, he's an extremely intelligent person. Why would you take a job like that under those circumstances?
He killed his political career.
But there you go. So those are the questions that we need to be asking now as we do like an epilogue on this whole thing. Why would you have taken a job like that? Because my thing is that if you give me a job,
let's take the job.
I gotta be able to look and see, or Eswick, because Eswick would have taken it if he didn't.
Well, you know
very well that friend of Stewart didn't take him in the Ministry of Finance.
But sure, he should have ducked out of that.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good chatting with you, Statsman. It was a slightly different angle than we normally talk, but I appreciate the opportunity to interact with you. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Peter, and welcome back.
Thank you very much, ma'am. I appreciate
my main, what I got talked about, two things came across when it was holding. One about first let's say what I'm saying. We have too many Barbadoses. There is theft, there is money laundering, there is misappropriation of funds, and the other one is what? Bribery.
Mm-hmm.
So it means if I steal, I am going to get a police record when I want a police certificate, it's going to say that you, darling, don't ever apply anywhere for a job. You will never get a job. But for the others, different kind of thing altogether. Now, what I want to talk about, I did hear you mention something about the hospital in Bay Street and being so near to the coastline. But what I remember several years ago, could have been 10 years or more, we had a high tide in Oystins, and the waves were about 10 feet tall, and they were coming over the Dane hospital business building up there. I had a conversation with Mr. Ellis about that, and he did agree with me, yes, that, you know, it was not the norm. And then I went on to say, you know, it seems as though all our major buildings are on the coast. Now, the tsunami would be coming from more up St. Philip's side. But since with all of the climate changes and the global warming and the rising tides and what have you, having every major clinic on the coast is a bad idea. And I've said that several times before. If anything happened like that in Carroll Bay, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have a hospital to take anybody to.
Okay.
All right. Now, first again, the engineering department will be gone because that's on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So would be the accident and emergency. So I have felt for years and years and years, and I've said it several times, we need to have a medical facility on higher ground in Barbados. So if and when anything happens, well, we can't control the earthquake, but if and when we do get this kind of rising sea levels, Bayview Hospital is gone. So is the QE. You come down the coast. But all the clinics in Belleville, you come down the coast. The latest one we have, even Sandy Crest. Where do you go?
Okay. Good point, ma'am. And I can agree with you on that, that this is a concern. We used to live close to the coast for historic reasons. We have now determined that it's perhaps better to live inland, and there will be a process during which we will relocate critical institutions inland. All right, ma'am, I want to thank you for your call. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take a few of the WhatsApp messages. Welcome back to Down to Brass Tacks. I have an email here from a gentleman. He says his name is Wendell Gollop. He said, Peter, then and now, I would happily welcome Don Valinis in my home on many levels, though I respect the court's decision. Dr. Lowe, however, was not convicted of anything, and I would not happily sit at any level with him, and it is nothing personal. And I think that also reflects my own personal position regarding the comparative difference between the two individuals, Dr. Lowe and Mr. Innes. I understand Dr. Lowe had a lot to say on Sunday last. The question, of course, is who is listening? Good morning. This one is a bit complicated. The lady says, I would like to hear the public's view on if you went to a particular person's house and knocked the door and asked for your husband, and the woman came to the door cussing you and then say to you that she is not calling the police for you, and the husband told her yes to call the police, what you as the wife will do. So I am reading it as it was sent. I'm not really sure what this is all about. Malcolm Gistate says, top of the day to you. Permit me to congratulate you on your lifestyle that you have chosen for yourself. I'm assuming he's speaking directly to me. I'm not a supporter of that lifestyle, whether it be for men or women. It is hoped that no church will ever bless such unions. Let me state emphatically that your other views and other positions where we agree has nothing to do with our sins. And this is from Reverend H. Malcolm Gibbs Tate. Reverend H. Malcolm Gibbs Tate. He's Gibbs Tate, right? Ordained Christian minister and outreach ministries. Perhaps Malcolm, you and I can have a chat about this issue sometime. I think an important point needs to be made that persons like myself respect the church's position, but really could care less what the church's position on it is. I really do feel that matters of the church and blessing unions and whatnot is a matter for the church. You have to work that out with your members and members within your clergy and members within your communion. that have those concerns about seeking blessings and you withholding blessings. It had nothing to do with me because I'm not part of that group. I belong to no church, and indeed I take a position that respects but rejects all religious indoctrination. So the position of Reverend Maxwell or the other reverend that was speaking or whatnot, it's interesting, and I think that it has a relevance in the context of a conversation in Barbados, you know, about various positions. But ultimately, I really don't believe that the view of yourself as an ordained minister should have any greater impact on me than the view of Dennis Johnson on the issue, because ultimately we live in a secular society, and it is one in which the church doesn't have the final say on these matters. So, yeah, I respect your position. I respect Reverend Maxwell's position. I would love to chat with both of you some more about your positions and the level of illogic that is replete in these positions. But just to say to you that for many of us, your views are not the final word on these issues, quite simply because we live in a secular society, and your views are, you know, go along with everybody else's. Somebody sends me a picture of the area where the National Insurance Building was before the National Insurance Building was there. It was a shop, and I think someone lived upstairs of that shop. And the person is saying that they thought the view was far nicer than it is now, and they hope we can go back to the days when the view is there. I have very, very vague recollections of that area. And I remember there was a lot of vending, and there was a shop, I believe it was a rum shop on that corner. I don't think we're going to go back to those days, but we'll see. Peter, congratulations on your nuptials. Thank you. I had the unfortunate opportunity to spend the last 3 weeks in Toronto hospitals, and I had to interact with many nurses from several CARICOM countries. I can lost count after 25 nurses. So yeah, I mean, we are complaining about nurses in Barbados, and it seems as though a lot of them are going to Canada, and that is the reality of life, you know, in so many places. I'd like to know what government will put in place if the coronavirus reaches our shores. I too have concerns. I traveled from Frankfurt, Germany, from France and Frankfurt, Germany yesterday. And it was interesting that in the airport, there were so many people wearing masks, you know, and then on the flight, there was actually a couple of people that traveled the entire 10 hours wearing face masks. I don't know how useful it was. But yeah, I am acutely concerned about it. And, you know, there have been discoveries. We had three in France, and now I understand the United States of America, they found something. And yeah, we need to be prepared. But really all we can do is just prepare, because the reality of globalization is such that it's going to come our way whether we like it or not. Anyhow, that's enough WhatsApp messages for now. We're going to take some calls and say good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good. First, let me say congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
This is not really my major point, but let me say it to people out there. I don't know how obvious it is to them, but the church don't marry anybody. Marriage is a civil union.
Yeah, that's something that a lot of people don't realize.
They don't seem to realize. When I got married, me and my wife, we filled out the documents, and then we chose to use a magistrate.
Right.
So
it was Chris Birch at the time?
Pardon?
Was it Justice Birch at that time?
No.
Right, because he was one of the magistrates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to say quickly, sir, that it's interesting in Barbados, what happens is that the marriage takes place in the way that you talked about, and you can get a certificate, your license, and go to the church and have it witnessed, or a marriage officer, or to the mosque, or wherever. The situation in France is actually completely different, and I thought it was interesting the way they do it. Their process is very secular. Of course, France jealously guards secularization, so they don't allow any kind of religious expression in any of the major services, and that is exactly one of them. So if you want to be married in a church in France, you have to get married the way I was married, and then you go to the church after to have the union blessed. And it's the same thing with Islam and whatnot. So they guard the secular nature of that exercise, and were I a Christian straight couple, where we'd be a Christian straight couple, we would have had exactly the same process that we had. And then we would have gone over to a church and had it blessed if we so desired. And I thought that that is an interesting thing that they do to maintain this understanding that the process belongs to the state and not to the church.
Yeah, exactly. The other religious belief is your religious belief, and you can keep that private within your circle.
And the other thing, I mean, I don't want to take away too much of your time, but and the other interesting point is the extent to which the Islamic desire to marry more than one woman, because of course it's consistent with Islamic teaching. There was a time it was consistent with Christian teaching too, but Christians seem to have forgotten that they used to allow people like, what was it, the Duke of Kedneza, or was it that had 300 wives and concubines?
Yeah.
Anyhow,
yeah,
well, you get the point.
Forget a lot of things. Anyhow,
so I was saying that's something that I thought was interesting, because in many places Muslims have been arguing and lobbying for the state to respect their right to have more than one wife. Mm-hmm. And one could argue that in a religious society, there could be a basis on which a person could marry two or three women if they so desired. But in a place like France, that guards the secular nature of the process, there's no question that that will ever happen, because the state has determined that it's two people, full stop. So those were two points that I thought were interesting that I've been reflecting on recently, and I'll let you know, get to your substantive point.
Yes, my substantial point is in supporting you with the whole transportation thing and the schools. Mm-hmm. And let me say this, I am not going to do research for anybody, but it's something that I've been following for more than maybe 15, 20 years, our behaviors, and also with the development of transportation and electric transportation. I've watched cities and different things around the world where people who earn more money than us get into a bus, a taxi, or a train, who live in houses that are, and apartments that are more costly than our homes, sometimes even smaller than our homes, who get into trains, buses, and taxis. But we still are holding to the fact that a car is a status symbol. Yeah. This is something that we have to let go. Now, let me assure the car
enthusiasts,
the car enthusiasts, and the car industry in Barbados, what I am suggesting will not wipe out the car industry in Barbados, because the world, the car industry, the legacy car industry, and the new startups have recognized they will make far more money with electrification and with ride sharing and car sharing. They will make more money than trying to sell a car and sell you parts over a 10-year period. It is recognized, the figures have been done by people who analyze what Tesla is doing, we just say that for every million electric cars he's able to put on the road, it will essentially, and being able to have artificial intelligence and self-driven cars, will efficiently remove 5 million cars off the road. Every million cars coming on will remove 5 million cars, because there will be no need for me and you to own a car when somebody decides they want to buy one and put it in the pool, where they will get dropped to work, and then the car will return and pick me up, and then maybe pick you up. Because the reality is, over 80% of cars sit in car parks for the entire day. Mm. Over 75% of people drive no more than 50 miles a day. Mm. Peter, how much money do you spend in gas a week?
But I don't spend much, because I come to work once a week.
If you spend an average of $100 a week, in 10 years you are talking $50,000. Can that money be invested in your pension, in your education for your children?
And it's basically money that's burning, because it's just fuel.
Yeah.
You know the challenge, sir, is that there's a cultural change that needs to take place. And I've made the comment that I leave Barbados and go to Miami. I drive to the airport in Barbados, leave the airport in Miami, and go and get on a bus and go to my destination. Yesterday, when I left Strasbourg, I left by bus, and I took a bus to Frankfurt, right? I fly to Barbados, I get to the airport, somebody picks me up in a car. There's a cultural presumption that we have in Barbados that requires cars, and there's a mindset that has to change.
Yeah,
in Europe, it is not. That's not the way it is. In the United States, a bit, but in Europe, people don't have this expectation that you will go everywhere by cars. The carpooling thing that you talked about, there is that facility in Strasbourg where I live partially, where you sign up to this facility and a car is made available to you when you need it. You book it online, like an app. You take the phone and you go and the phone opens the car. You jump in. You drive around and do your chores. And you can either return it to the place that you left it or you can just drop it somewhere
where
there's a sign. And then the next person picks it up and they use it. I find it fascinating. I really don't know if Barbados is ready yet to think on that level. But it is far more efficient, as you said, to have that one car working hard, doing all of these different chores and errands for different people, than to have a situation where I own a vehicle and I will bring it and put it in the car park here in Starcom and I will leave it here for 6 hours.
It's great. But the other point that is more valuable to me is that when we add up the cost, the lost hours, the money in fuel, where the money also going to generate electricity and fuel as well. This is foreign exchange that has, when we go to gas station and we pay a Barbados dollars for gas.
Right.
But the reality is that's costing foreign exchange.
Yeah.
And when you don't have enough investment coming in, You're bleeding foreign exchange, and we're bleeding foreign exchange.
But who's gonna take the initiative? Because if as I said, we decide, you know what, the whole South Coast, we need a tram on the South Coast, running from Bridgetown right up to Oystens, where I can go and stand up and I can get that tram every 15 minutes in nice air-conditioned comfort, and essentially the whole road is no longer used as a road. The deliveries and so on will go through back roads and so on, but the main road is essentially for pedestrians and just a tram. The level of dislocation and cost has to be defended. Do you think that a government of Barbados can take an initiative like that and live to see another day?
I think that the all around the world, I've even seen, I think it was recently in Belgium,
mm-hmm.
where they actually added more trams.
Everywhere, that's what's happening.
Showing, and we have the density, we have the roads where we need to move because we are bleeding money.
Yeah, but I asked you a question, sir.
I think it has to be done. I am sorry. I will support any government who will do it because it has
I would too, but it's not about you and me, you know. It's not about you and me because you and I have clearly seen.
They need to see. That, okay, there was one argument this guy made, and at one time, I was making an environmental argument for electric cars and stuff like that. And after listening to his submission, I realized that he was correct. He said, like, this whole argument about the environment and stuff, he said, until you show the people where the money is going to be made, nobody's making any change. And it has been proven because more people see where the money is going to be made, that's where they're making the movements.
Well,
and we need to do the studies, if they have not already been done, sitting down somewhere, to show the people where the money is.
Well, I would say to you that it isn't a question of money is going to be made. I think it's a question of efficiency.
But that
if you can tell me that there's another way for me to avoid that confusion that took away 2 hours of my time today, 2+ hours, to pick up somebody from the airport. If you say to me, Pete, there's another way that this can be done that doesn't require you sitting down in a car and burning fuel and cussing and quarreling for 2.5 hours to pick up someone from the airport, I would buy into it. And I think that is perhaps a logic that we haven't started to explore. Can we not have facilities whereby it can make it easier for people to get around, to get to school, to get home, less traffic, greater comfort? And if you are able to sell that to people, I feel it can work. And
Listen,
I think the process has to be driven. Ultimately, people like you and me have to be part of a process that says to government, whichever one, look, let's have some initiatives that attempt to deal with the problem because this nonsense cannot continue.
Yeah, it cannot. Listen, annoying that I would put my head on the block. I haven't done a study yet, but I would bet anyone that 25% of people who have bought cars and drive to work only do it because transportation is so poor.
Of course they do.
Even where transportation is available, the service that is provided by the people providing it is so poor.
I mean, you look at what is happening in Trinidad and Tobago. You look at what is happening in Jamaica. And I see that's where Barbados is going, and it scares the daylights out of me. I mean, you look at Trinidad and Tobago, where in theory, there are places in the north that you can take 4 hours to drive to the airport one way, depending on the time of day that you leave.
Both of them, Trinidad and Jamaica, and it is crazy.
It's unfathomable for me to say that I was sitting in a car driving for all that time. And then what can happen when you need to urinate?
A lot of man hours lost.
So it isn't impractical. It means a taxi driver that does that ultimately just does two trips a day. And that's his entire day.
And that's where a lot of, you know, we could use everything that we have now presently on Barbados could be used to make it efficient. The ZRs, the public, the government system, the taxis, all these things could be used to reduce this craziness. You know, initially the car places would be maybe take a hit, but I argue that they really won't. People will still kind of keep their cars, but if you provide a convenience, then they will go with it. But then with all the electrification coming along and the artificial intelligence and self-driving and stuff like that, these car companies will rebound and they will be the ones making the money.
Yeah. In the long run, because they'll be
the ones running the thing. Yeah. You know? Anyhow, Peter. Right.
So this is a good conversation with you, and I do hope that a couple of people were listening that can really take this thing further, because we can't let Barbados get to the stage of Trinidad and Tobago or Jamaica. No, with all respect to them, Dennis, I don't have a problem with Trinidad. I love Trinidad. But I really do feel that we need to nip this thing in the bud, and we need to do something sensible regarding traffic management. When we drop those two hotels on the South Coast, one lower down and one up in Accra, when it grows in size, I support that entirely. Let me not make it clear. But when we do that, we are going to increase the level of congestion on those roads probably 3 or 4-fold. We need to do something about the situation with traffic. So, sir, let's keep on pressing this button and hope that there are a few people listening to us. Right? Thanks a lot for calling. Gentleman says, welcome back. First, I have to wish you well in your secular journey. I must say that you are truly an assertive person, one who has an ability to make individual choices and are not easily dissuaded. To put it in common vernacular, one can say that you have the intestinal fortitude to achieve your goals in life. I have to give you your thoughts on the destruction of the two defunct derelict buildings in the city. The reality is that neither serves any significant historical contextual value. For those persons who think they do, they should identify the history that is best served by either of these structures. The REA EnviroHealth International Project report on the air quality assessment of the physical gaseous parameter has shown that the levels of total volatile organic compounds present were in excess of the internationally recommended standards. I don't know why it was I just read. Anyhow, this is a 2018 assessment, and the findings were published. So why should we continue to keep a structure when it is posing a significant health hazard? I think there is need now more than ever for our governments to enact the Shaw Act if it has not already been done. Someone also sends me a note on car sharing, and this is something called Zipcar for Business, where people share cars. The one in Strasbourg is called the Auto Tremont, where you share a vehicle. This gentleman tells me he flies to Toronto, he has a Presto card, he takes it to the bus, and then he would take his bus to the destination. So the combination of public transport and car sharing seems to be the way that we can go. Why don't people invest in motorcycles? Less stress, less traffic. My problem with motorcycles is also more broken bones. So I ain't really about that. I have given my mother the assurance that while she breathes breath, I will not ride a motorcycle. So I can't encourage nobody to do it either. We take a break and come right back.